A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the latest episode of the Red Men Weekly podcast, a show where we bring you the best clips from our Red Men Plus content over the last week or so. Get involved with these shows in full video and podcast form over on redmenplus.com. If you sign up as a legend, you've still got time to enter our last couple of prize draws. We've got a Jamie Carragher signed programme, a Liverpool shirt signed by the amazing Ibu Konate as well to give away on Boxing Day. So if you get yourselves involved, redmenplus.com, join as a legend, get yourselves in the hat to win potentially one of those amazing prizes, and check out our latest upcoming feature, the 50 greatest Liverpool signings of all time. It's our countdown of Liverpool's 50 best ever transfers as voted by over 7,000 Liverpool fans. That'll be available on Red Men Plus on Christmas Eve and Christmas Day, parts 1 and 2. So yeah, get yourselves over there, get all that stuff, and listen or watch these entire episodes in full. The first one is the Biased Football Podcast. This week, it was Paul, Chris, Dan, and the return of our good friend Ben Kelly to have a big old chat about what is going on around the rest of the Premier League.
Just one more thing I want to do before we wrap up. I want to do the Who Will Be Top of Christmas, because obviously Christmas Day is Monday this year, so no Bias Football Podcast for us next week. Steele will probably be working in the night because he can't help himself, but we won't be able to do the pod. So I want to ask the question. Obviously, we've got Arsenal to come at the weekend. Villa, I've got Sheffield United. I've just spent the weekend with I've got one brother-in-law who's an Arsenal fan and two who are Aston Villa fans, and they were all, it was the happiest everyone's ever been together at any one given time. So that was a thing. But the Villa fans, I was a little like,
it's never happened while they've been alive.
Yeah.
It can't have
happened. Yeah, yeah. And certainly not while I've known them. You know, the occasion Villa obviously come up with some good results here and there along the way, and even Arsenal have been crap for, you know, most of the last 10 years. But the Villa fans were so, like, not like, you know, overtly, stupidly confident, but in like that playful way that you get to be when there's no expectation on you. And they were all doing it the weekend going, well, you'll drop points to, you know, Brighton will do something with Arsenal.
They've got their own spreadsheets with Liverpool and Arsenal. Yeah.
I think they're just like, they look like they're having an absolute whale of a time. And when you look at the league table, so obviously Arsenal top of the pile on 39, Liverpool second on 38, level on points with Aston Villa. Just Liverpool got a plus 21 goal difference to Villa's 16. What do we reckon? Who's going to be top at Christmas this year?
LIV. Yeah.
We beat Arsenal.
Yeah, I think we do. The thing about Arsenal is that they just consistently shit themselves at Anfield. Like there was a whole thing on the Amazon documentary a couple of years ago about Arteta telling them don't lose your heads. I lost my head here once. And then he lost his head, and they lost 4-0. Like, and then even last year with Xhaka and all that, 2-0 up in that game, absolutely in cruise control against the poorest Liverpool side that we've seen for some time. And I just think that half five. Saturday night, Anfield's going to be bladdered, by the way, 2 days before Christmas.
I spoke to Ross and I was like, are you coming for the game? I was like, yeah, I'm absolutely drinking for this one, Arsenal game. He's like, yeah, sounds so am I. I've had this one in my diary for ages. I was like, what time are you going out? And he goes, 12:30. I went, lads, I'm not going. At 12:30. And I went, what time's kickoff? We're 5:30. I went, I will see you at some point before the game. I am not
Five
starting.
Hours worth of-
no, I won't remember the game.
No. But I admire the energy. I'm not doing that either. But I admire the commitment to it. But the point being is, you know, I do get the feeling that we as a result of all of that and that what's at stake in terms of, you know, it's a nice little thing to be top at Christmas. The atmosphere on Saturday will be, I think, probably what we were hoping it would have been yesterday. Yeah. It didn't quite, but I just get the feeling that we rarely have Saturday night half five kickoffs at home, which I think for starters will get people in the mood, being 2 days before Christmas as well just adds to it.
Yeah, I agree with that one. I think there's so much pressure that gets thrown out, it's going to be thrown in that game because, again, the Villa stuff. And it goes back to our, we've been saying this throughout, like for weeks now, it's all on City. So, you know, City are out the equation for a bit. They're behind us in points. They're behind us in the table. There's a chance they could be fifth in the league, you know, by the end of the weekend if Spurs have their way as well. It wouldn't be the end of the world if Villa ended up top, but they've got Sheffield United. Villa should be picking up the points, and then that's on Liverpool or Arsenal to go and grab it, really, because if they can't, and look, it's the foibles of the league, it could be a draw, and that will really blow things sort of wide open. But I don't know, I'm weirdly calm and kind of laissez-faire. I agree with that point. I think there's now even more on that Arsenal game, and I don't mind that from our perspective. I don't mind us being a little bit like, we've got to show Arsenal what it means to be in a title race kind of thing. I like that idea.
And I think the noise is coming out of the players. Virgil van Dijk posted earlier on Instagram, and they do that regardless, of course they do, but the noise is coming out of the players on the back of yesterday suggests to me that they know they were below par against Manchester United, and they're going to want to put that right. And Ben mentioned all the factors there. It's Anfield, it's R5, it's right before Christmas. Like, this fixture, including the West Ham one in this as well, I think it's a bit of a godsend, really. The fact we are playing back-to-back so quickly, both at Anfield, like, that's ideal. It could have been Luton away, followed by Crystal Palace away. I know they're dumb, but it could have been those two types of fixtures. All of a sudden you're looking at that going, oh, we've had a ball crappy draw against United and we've got these two, but West Ham and Arsenal home back to back right before Christmas, like, I'd have signed up for that weeks, months ago. So I think it's worked out as well as it possibly could, and because of that I'm backing us to grab it, really, and sort of take it by the scruff of the neck. And we need to, because we haven't been playing well for a considerable amount of time now. So it feels like an opportunity for Liverpool to make that statement. The statement we would have liked to have seen yesterday against Manchester United, of course, would have. But that's just because they're our rivals. In many ways, what we do now for the next 6 days or whatever it is could be a bigger statement in terms of what the season means.
Yeah, absolutely. And you've got to remember, I think, as well, to add on to what Dan said there, we have got them, Ben said it on the main podcast, we've got them in early February or whatever it is, isn't it? Away from home. So now's a chance to go out there and get 3 points and guarantee that from those two games, you're going to come out at least level on points with them.
Yeah.
But, you know, hopefully 4 points, 6 points out of those two games is what you need.
Is that a game, the away one in the league, that if Egypt make the final, are we missing Salah?
I hope not. But also, I'm not that arse because he's been playing like arse.
Yeah. He shows up, doesn't he?
All our other players are playing really well as well, though, in attack. So we'll be fine.
It's just that we haven't got a right winger.
I'm not sure off the top of my head. I don't think so. I'm pretty sure.
We played Chelsea on the Wednesday night, the 31st of January.
Yeah.
And I think that's definitely in there.
That will be,
I think we played Bournemouth in the mix.
Bournemouth on the 21st of January.
So it might be back for Arsenal. I'll
double check it. So you're right. 3rd of February is when we play Arsenal and the African Cup of Nations.
If they final
date. There we go. And it's normally like the first week of February that gets played.
You get knocked out early.
11th of February.
Oh my god!
Is the African Cup of Nations final? Yeah, so right. Zero chance. If
I think Egypt are too much of a one man band for them. Yeah, I don't think like they're going to get that. I mean, but if they're not going to win it, go out on the group stage, please. But I just don't see them. It could be famous last words, but even more so than 2 years ago when they ended up in the final with Mane, they're weaker than they were then, and I just don't think he got enough. Even as you say, all joking aside, even he's not in good enough form to feel like he's really dragging through. But I do hope he wins something for his country. But you know, I know in a way.
Well, if he wants to win the Ballon d'Or, you know, that's one of the sort of tick points for him, isn't it? Like, I mean, he's going to have to win a major honour along the way. And you know, obviously, look, Liverpool winning the Premier League would help, but we'll see how well that's weighted towards. You know, if one of the other contenders, like if Jude Bellingham lifts the European Cup with Real Madrid, you know, I mean, that's going to make a big difference. If someone, Harry Kane, lifts the Euros with England, that will go in his favour. So Salah could do with that. Yeah. But you're right. I don't know enough about Egypt to know whether they've got enough to go on that. But just bringing it back. It's it's great stuff, isn't it? You know, the week before Christmas, perfect, to have like a League Cup quarter final when you can start, you can, if you get that box, it's either Liverpool get knocked out and we're disappointed, and I think it adds a bit more fuel to the Arsenal fire, or you're looking ahead to, we've got a two-legged semi-final and you're two games away from a, you know, another trophy, you know, a chance at a trophy. And again, you could be top of Christmas. I know we're not the team that are great at dealing with such things, but everyone else seems to be good at it. So, you know,
maybe we have done it.
Yes.
You know,
yeah,
we have actually won when we've been top of Christmas. Yeah. So it's fine. It's just we've lost more. but we get a chance to go level on 2-2, will it be?
In terms of being that and not winning it.
Yeah.
I think so.
Okay, so yeah.
Are we topping 13-14, top of Christmas?
I think we're
3-2 down, maybe.
What about 2018-19? Were we top
of Christmas?
13-14, we were top of Christmas. And 20, COVID season 20, we were top of Christmas.
Okay,
well,
think about goal difference, right? Pull one back. Next season, we can get it back to fucking 3-0. Istanbul, this.
My sneaky feeling on this is that, again, it's just a milestone. It's just a get to there, get to top and get to the. Normally, the team that's top of Christmas is also, I think, historically tends to have bigger leads when Liverpool are top of Christmas and we don't win. It's normally a lot closer.
And we've had that fucking cheating team behind us every time.
Yes. Everton. But my sneaky feeling is Everton. Yeah.
The bigger cheating.
The admittedly cheating. No, the unadmittedly cheating. I think this is going to be, I think it's just setting up for a really mad, like, back and forth, duking out. The fact that we've gone top and then not, and then fallen off is not what happens. That's not, we don't normally do that. So feel like we might have a completely different kettle of fish on our hands this time around. To,
you wouldn't really want a kettle of fish, would you?
No.
That wouldn't stink. Yeah.
Grim.
How do they get out?
Yeah, boiled fish.
One at a time.
Do you think Liverpool can be top at Christmas? Do you think they're going to beat Arsenal, or do you think it will be Villa that will steal a march on both of those to take the top spot over the festive period? Let us know in the comments.
Thanks to Paul and the guys for that one. Let's move on. It is Jano Insight time. Yes, again, this week I was joined by Neil Jones, Liverpool Jano extraordinaire, to have a little chat about Liverpool's injuries, who they're missing, who they could get back, and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, check out what Neil had to say. Let's start with Alexis. I don't think you spoke about it on last week's show. I think Jürgen kind of confirmed it afterwards out that it's bad. So, I mean, it doesn't sound great when he says that the stud went right through the muscle into his bone.
Yeah.
And now we have to wait till it's healed. It's been pretty painful. Obviously, he missed the game the other day. It feels like this might be one that lingers on a little bit. Like, I'd be shocked if we see him Wednesday. I'd be shocked if we saw him on the weekend. It doesn't, obviously his Instagram pictures didn't do any favours when he's walking around on crutches. Like his leg was hanging off. But it's a strange injury. Like, Liverpool seem to get these weird injuries, but like, it has been a blow to not have Alexis. I think we definitely missed him at the weekend. We have noticed what we've lost since he's been out the team.
Yeah, definitely. And obviously going to talk about Gravenberg, but you lose another midfield in the meantime as well, which adds further pressure. I don't know. I mean, Pep Linders is doing his press conference later today. So I actually tried to ask, and Tony just ignored me, missed my eye, and just left the press conference on Sunday. I was about to ask about Jota and McAllister. Was there any chance of them featuring in the Christmas games? And it didn't happen. So I would hope he gets asked today, or he offers that up, Pep. Yeah, you're right. Liverpool have missed them, definitely. I think what you're seeing before his injury was that they were getting the hang of using McAllister and getting the hang of how they have to play when he plays in that midfield. And I think his form was improving. You know, I thought he was pretty good against Sheffield United. Obviously had that big moment against Fulham. I think a few people were surprised he was taken off in that game when he was playing so well. Did okay at City as well. One of the players who I think found a good level there. So he has been missed. You can see, I thought Endo played well on Sunday. I thought for him, you know, he can come away and say, well, I didn't lose many battles. I didn't sort of, you know, hinder my team in any way. I played forward when I could. But he's not quite the same in terms of the way he moves the ball. He's not as sharp. He's not as quick. He's not as, probing with those passes. He's a little bit more robotic. You know, you can sort of, you can read what he's going to do a little bit. Easier if you're the defending side. He's not going to surprise you too much, but having bodies, I think, is the more important thing at this stage, because Liverpool are just looking a little bit, you know, just a couple short sometimes in games, whether it's, you know, if a couple are off it, have you got anyone else? And the one that I wrote about on Monday, and I think McAllister's definitely one that they missed, but Jota, I think, is the one that they've missed badly since he got injured. And there's a stat that I've used, which they've scored 9 goals in the Premier League since he was injured, and only one of them has been from the forwards. And I don't think that's any coincidence. I think Liverpool have found it either more difficult to create good chances in the box or to convert them in the box, and I think Jota helps with both of those aspects, you know, especially in games where you've got tight defences, where you're crossing it a lot, where you're spending a lot of time in the opposition half and you're sort of having to rely on second balls, ricochets, you know, reactions, those kind of things. That's where Jota shines. So I would dearly love if Pep Linders give us some hope that he could be featuring against Arsenal, because they're his favourite opponents.
Absolutely loves scoring League Cup goals against Arsenal as well, I suppose. The question on, he was running, wasn't he? I think that was the last update we got on Jota. So he hopefully isn't too far away. It's just how cautious to be. Liverpool have got now game Wednesday, Saturday, Tuesday.
They've got a decent break between the Burnley and the Newcastle game, haven't they? You know, about as good as it could be, really, you know, for a Christmas period. We're used to 26, 28, aren't 16. We? You know, 26, 29 or whatever. They've got, you know, a decent clear week there. But the need, obviously, is there. I think Burnley, I think you could, without being disrespectful, I think you could, there is scope to make a few changes to the team. I can imagine Jarrell Kwanza playing in a game like that.
Burnley away is different, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Burnley away on Boxing Day or New Year's Day.
And it's not a case of, it'll be easy. It's just
a different challenge.
And players who are capable of playing in a game like that, you know, Endo, Harvey Elliott potentially, you know, get a start in a league game, which he hasn't done too often. But just having people like Jota available on the bench even for 15 minutes. Obviously, the knock-on effect of him not being available is that the three have really been asked to do it all, haven't they, in the league games, you know, and with Gakpo as the sub, and it just means that maybe they're adding their fatigue, but they're not in form as well. So it just stands out a little bit more. But yeah, having Jota and McAllister back ASAP would be very nice, and you know, we'll segue into Ryan Gravenberch.
Yeah,
Ryan
Gravenberch went off. Obviously, Jürgen's comments after the game, where he told me it got worse during the game, so it means it was not BAM. We hoped it would go by, but it didn't. I was not serious. We don't know if he'll be a part of the next three matches. We'll see. I mean, it's unlikely that a fella ever goes down like that and just plays like a few days later for Liverpool. It didn't look particularly great for Ryan Gravenberch. Again, he's someone you mentioned before, what young players who haven't, he hasn't played a lot, and then he's been thrown into what's been a very intense schedule, and he's picked up injuries he's had little ones and twos all through. He missed the Brentford game, didn't he, where he'd got a little knock as well,
just before the international break,
just before that. So it just feels like he's another one who, it's no real surprise really for a lad who hasn't played footy for a year at this time of year to get a little muscle injury. It depends how now, because when you lose, you've already got no Thiago and Bacetic, we'll see how that could be any time, who knows. Then you lose McAllister, and then you go grab him, all of a sudden you've gone from having like 6, 7, 8, 9 midfield options, and you're down to not bare bones, but you're down to a couple less.
Yeah.
And those lads are being asked to go to the well again and again and again. Like, Gravenberch got in the team because Curtis got injured, it's worth mentioning, and suspended and injured.
Yeah.
It does give Curtis an opportunity, but Liverpool, again, 3 games in 6 days or whatever that they've got to play, Wednesday to Tuesday. It isn't ideal.
It's not. I mean, it was a shame for Gravenberch, because just before he got injured, he'd just done the best thing he'd done in the whole game, hadn't he? He just had that run where he just ended on the edge of the box, and that's the best thing about him, the way he plays.
He carries the ball,
but if you roll it in someone, he's got his back to someone, you know he's not going to lose it, because he's just so strong and sort of wiry in the way he can turn. You're right, him not playing many games for Bayern, that's the effect of it, isn't it, when you're not conditioned to that level of schedule. And Liverpool have been relatively careful with him. He hasn't, you know, I don't think he's done 90 minutes too often. They obviously tried to manage him on Thursday night in Belgium. He come off for 45, and then he goes down just before the hour. So I'd be surprised if we see him. I'd be amazed if we see him tomorrow. I'd be surprised if we see him against Arsenal and Burnley, to be perfectly honest, just because of the nature of a hamstring injury. Seems to be minimum 10 days, 2 weeks, doesn't it? So fingers crossed you just get that sort of unexpected delight that it was just a bit of cramp or fatigue in the muscle, but I'm not holding my breath on that one. I think we might not see Gravenberch until at least January the 1st.
Yeah, I think we'll see how that one pans out. Perhaps got his press comments a bit later on.
Sorry, but you're right. I mean, Curtis Jones, then Harvey Elliott, step up. Maybe Gakpo in midfield. You know, maybe you see that.
Trent.
Possibly Trent, yeah, absolutely. I mean, given the way Joe Gomez played second half again at right back with Trent in midfield, why not? Why not have a look at that? But Curtis, I think what Curtis might do a little bit is just add a degree of sort of calm to things. You know, a lot of it on Sunday was obviously quite frantic, wasn't it? You know, it felt like Liverpool was sort of chasing a winner from the word go. Maybe just brings a little bit more of that kind of tactical, you know, reliability. But you want to see him get back to the form he showed. You know, he had a difficult start over in Belgium, didn't he? He hasn't started a league game for a few. So opportunity for him when McAllister, Gravenberch are out.
Absolutely. And then the final injury, not everyone might be aware of this one, of course. It's about Ben Doak. So he was taken off 28th minute. Liverpool beat Chelsea at Kirby on Sunday 2-1. It was a late goal from Bobby Clark, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I think I'm right in saying. But Ben Doak came off in the 28th minute, replaced by a young Jace Bearden. And it was his knee.
Yeah.
And knee injuries are never great. But like, if Liverpool were, again, another player who might have been involved on Wednesday, at least on the bench, Liverpool are running out of forwards a little bit. They've got one missing already. It wasn't a great look when Bento hobbled off with a knee. I know we haven't had no official update yet, but it wasn't brilliant.
No, it's not, and it's not good timing for him, obviously, with the West Ham game. You know, again, Burnley.
Afon coming up, Salah, etc.
Depending on how long it is. Indeed, yeah, and fingers crossed it's not a serious injury for him, first and foremost. But yeah, that's another one that just puts a bit more strain on the bench. You know, he wasn't... I'm guessing he played for the 21s on Sunday with the idea of West Ham on Wednesday. You know, I would have thought he'd have been on the bench for the first team, but probably they deemed not better for him to get some minutes. So to go down with an injury is not ideal. There were some positives for the 21s. You mentioned Bobby Clark scored the winner. That was his first game in close to 3 months. Great goal as well, if anyone's seen it. A sort of proper Thierry Henry finishing to the far corner. Great for him. Is it too early to put him in the squad for West Ham? Probably. But I know he'd love to. Oakley Cannonier came back. Harvey Blair came back. I don't think they'll be featuring in these games. They probably missed the boat in the sense of the Europa League games earlier in the season. But yeah, losing Doak, it's not the biggest blow in the world in terms of, you know, Ben Doak's injured, but it does put further strain on the bench, the squad, the attacking options that Jürgen's got within games and you know, to rest. You know, for example, he could have started Doak against West Ham for 45 and brought on Salah for 45. Now he can't. It might give a chance to Kate Gordon, possibly, instead, and he moves into that role. But yeah, the more bodies you've got at this time of year, the better. And first and foremost, for Ben, let's hope it's not a bad injury.
Yeah, never nice seeing knees. I was just looking, because Kate Gordon wasn't involved with the 21s. He wasn't involved with the 18s. He wasn't on Liverpool's bench. So maybe they are looking after Cade.
Obviously. Yeah, absolutely.
We saw them
Got an hour, didn't he?
He got an hour in midweek. But I want to speak about this, actually, while we're here, because, again, I might be reading way too much into this, and feel free to just tell me. It was a meaningless game when Liverpool weren't bothered, but I found it quite interesting that it was Ben Doak who got shifted away to the left, and Kate Gordon played more on the right-hand side. And then almost like he was like a seniority type of thing. I don't know I might be reading way too much into that, but I think it's fair to say if Gordon is available for the next couple of days, I wouldn't be shocked if he gets minutes in the next week at some point.
No, I thought, actually, it was a very difficult game, wasn't it? It wasn't a very exciting game, but I thought he looked quite positive. He carried the ball a few times.
He's growing,
a few free kicks. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know this for sure, but I think that was more the type of player Cade is. Yeah. Conor Bradley playing right back. You don't want two players who dribble down the line, so maybe you want Cade sort of coming infield a little bit and opening that space. But I don't think there's that much wrong with almost pitting them against each other. You know, I've heard people say that about Liverpool Academy players. Actually, Conor Bradley was one that they used. I think it was Bradley, Ramsey, and another forgotten man really, but Isaac Mbeya, someone said, well, almost just let them run and see who runs the furthest for them. You know, that's the kind of the mentality, you know, don't shy away from the fact that, yeah, they're both pretty much competing for one spot in on the bench, maybe, or in the squad. You know, like I say, opportunities come from misfortune sometimes, and Ben Doak's misfortune might be Cade Gordon's opportunity, but I don't think anyone would begrudge Cade Gordon an opportunity after the luck he's had. So possibly we'll see him, might see him start against West Ham, might see him on the bench, might see him on the bench in a few games coming up. I'd be delighted to see him come on and make an impact. You know, it's easy to forget how good a player he is, isn't it?
And I think he's brilliant.
Was. Let's hope he gets back to that kind of level that he was at before his injury.
Yeah, I think he's fantastic. Big future, hopefully, for him.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Thank you very much to Neil for coming in. Yeah, and then last but not least this week, it's the final word show. Liverpool through to the Carabao Cup semi-finals after wiping the floor with West Ham. They hammered the hammers, pardon the ridiculously rubbish pun. And after the game, it was Dan Clubb, it was John Machen and Paul Machen having a big old chat about what we learned from Liverpool's win over David Moyes' Hammers.
Just on the likes of Curtis Jones, Harvey Elliott, Joel Quansah, Joe Gomez and Cody Gakpo, they all come into this conversation really in one way or another. They all took the chance essentially last night because they were all new into the starting 11. Do you think any of them, Paul, have really, I mean, Curtis Jones is probably the standout when it comes to this, but do you think any of them have really put the hand up for selection when it comes to the Arsenal game? I mean, it's difficult for Harvey Elliott because I mentioned this to Chris earlier, his two positions are Mohamed Salah's and Dom Szoboszlai, so it's nigh on impossible for them to sort of drop out, would you say?
Well, it's interesting because, yeah, look, there's no chance that Harvey Elliott starts in place of Mohamed Salah against Arsenal. It's just not going to happen. But it is interesting that Salah's position has changed this season. I'm probably the back end of last, certainly, as well, where he's not the flying winger anymore, because the big criticism of Harvey Elliott with him being the understudy to Mo Salah was his pace. And Elliott, actually, I think he's improved his pace. I don't know how possible that actually is. He's certainly quicker, but he's not fast. You know, he's not electric. He's not the kind of guy who's going to accelerate away from people. Like Ben Doak's got that. He's got that raw pace. Harvey hasn't got that. But Salah doesn't use that pace in that role anymore for us. And you can even see it last weekend. You know, the time when the ball gets played over to him, and 3 or 4 years ago, Salah's racing onto that, and even he's not there anymore. So the new Mohamed Salah sort of role, whatever you want to call it, Elliot probably suits that actually better than he would have done 3 years ago. So you can see him flourishing that. It's that role where you play. He will make the pitch big. He will go and stand on the touchline, and that's certainly how he started the game against West Ham. which is great because it just stretches their defence a little bit. But actually with Harvey, he wants to just get on the ball, he wants to pick up pockets of space, he wants to make things happen, and he's got the eye for goal. Like, he nearly scored a, he didn't score a screamer in the first half. I was kind of right behind it, obviously opposite end of the pitch, and it just goes wide of the right top hand corner. I there's a big question whether that's his best position or the attacking eight. I just think we need to find a way to get him in the team at the moment. And look, Thomas Boslay scored a great goal, so I think he's probably just at the right moment to come back to a little semblance of form. But
he's still got age on his side, hasn't he? I think you know, we've got a couple of years before we need to definitely, you know, find his position. But he gets better and better every time I see him. You know, and I'm always amazed by his touch. I mean, the beauty of him when he plays out on the wing is that if you push the ball to him, it's instantly in control.
Yeah,
all the time, not just once or twice, never ever out of his control. And from that, he's able to jockey past people, and he does have a bit of pace over a few yards, and he can do loads of damage.
It's the all round stuff as well. He tackles back brilliantly, and again, that was a critique of him playing in the midfield, was does he do enough cover? We had Trent at right back, etc. Yeah, he does. He's one of them who I think some players, particularly like flair players, you see it, you can train them into it, and you can have like a hot period where they're under loads of instruction and they know the job and they'll do it. But like when the chips are down and you're tired and it's hard, it's not second nature to them. Harvey Elliott, it is. And the amount of times he'll just go back and be dogged and go, and not necessarily like go and put a big slide in and come away with the ball, but he'll go and get a toe on it, he'll knock it away, or he'll win throw-ins, or he'll do whatever. He'll disrupt the play brilliantly. It's one of them. If he had another half a yard of pace and he was, you know, 6 inches taller, you'd be talking about, you know, where can he go with that? He's going to have to continue to work harder than everyone else probably for the rest of his career because of those things. But right now, I think he's our 12th man at the moment. But the beauty is, when we won the title, Oxlade Chamberlain was our 12th man, but he was never going to be more than that because obviously post injuries he had a ceiling. I don't know how good Elliott can be, but if you told me he was starting against Arsenal, I honestly would not care. I think
if you look at his ability to pass the ball, you know, those lovely 1-2s he plays in his positional sense, you know, you're never going to be unhappy about him being in the team.
And that speaks just how impressive he's been, certainly started last season and what he's done so far this. Very technically proficient footballer, very intelligent footballer as well, and one who we can never doubt his work rate with because he just works his socks off every time.
He's a fan.
Exactly.
Having fans of the team in the team makes a huge difference. Yeah. There's a reason why, you know, like the Jace Bearings and John Flanagans and, you know, Ricky Lambert and all these guys, you'd get a level above these players just because they want to do it for the football club.
I do want to have a quick conversation about Joe Gomez as well, because I thought it was another really impressive night for him, right back of course. Does this fast forward the conversation about Trent going into midfield permanently? Because obviously we've seen that when Trent comes on, it still feels a little bit experimental when we do it, because we haven't seen it in the biggest of games yet. Obviously Saturday is probably the biggest of games, given where we both are in the league and stuff like that.
Given Martinelli on the left,
do you think it's time?
Yeah, I do. I think for the Arsenal game in particular, we had good success. We obviously unveiled the inverted Trent against Arsenal at Anfield last season, and it ultimately worked well, you know, as the game wore on. But I think if Alexis McAllister was fit, I think he'd persist with Trent. But I think Gomez's form has been so good, and I just think, as much as Endo's actually makes this a more interesting conversation probably than it was 2 or 3 weeks ago, Trent's been playing more and more of it. He's the most cultured player who can play in that position that we've got. I do wonder whether this might be the game that they go for.
I don't agree particularly. I think I love Joe Gomez, and I think he is playing out of his skin at the moment and is definitely worth a place. But for me, Trent controls games of football as an inverted player and not as a defensive midfield player. And, you know, I think if you stick him in, when I've seen him go into the DM role, his influence on the game is much, much less. And I think freeing him up is the key to us beating football teams.
I think I think Curtis Jones is key to this. I think if you start Curtis Jones, then I think you can play Trent in that position. Whereas I think if you play Gravenberch, I don't think you can.
We've seen that against Fulham, didn't we? And that's when his influence definitely did wane on the game. He wasn't anywhere near as good. And then we put him into an 8 or stroke 10 by the end of it, and all of a sudden he was brilliant again. So it's a really interesting conversation. I'm sort of in the middle still, but I am edging further and further toward maybe it is time for Trent to go in.
What surprises me is how we solved our poor fullback problem, where we conceded lots of goals because of the way we played as fullback, and we actually solved that by moving him out of being a fullback and left it blank, which is crazy.
No, it's absolutely insane. The big question really is, you know, is the inverted thing actually right for us? Because we and Chris were having this conversation the other day. Liverpool, I don't think have lost. We've lost like one game, I think, since we moved to that sort of system. But also, I've watched us shift formation lots in games of football
United, he went back to playing wide. Yes. You know, Trent spent the whole of the first half on the right wing with no influence whatsoever on the game.
Yeah. It's nice to have the flexibility, I suppose, isn't it?
Cheers to Dan and cheers to Team Machen for that one. Hope you enjoyed it. Yes, that is us wrapping up the Red Men Weekly podcast for this week. Like I say, go over to redmenplus.com, get yourselves involved if you want those shows in their entirety, plus all of our amazing upcoming Christmas content. The game on Saturday as well, if you want to get involved with that one. We'll have loads of pre-game and post-game stuff, both over on our YouTube channel and, of course, again, over on Red Men Plus, including the watch along on YouTube with me and Errol. So wherever you're watching, if you want to mute the telly, put us on your second device, listen to our commentary, get involved with all our fans. You've got live chats, you've got songs, you've got stats, and basically just really, really biased Liverpool coverage of the game. Then you get yourselves involved on the watch along on YouTube. Got final shout out one more time for the 50 greatest Liverpool signs of all time. That will be available Christmas Eve and Christmas Day. Get yourselves involved with that one. If I don't speak to you beforehand, have a very, very Merry Christmas. We'll be back with another Red Men Weekly podcast next Friday. Take care.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Megan Rinks.
And I'm Melissa D. Montz.
And like every other person with access to a microphone, we started a podcast.
On Mondays, we release Don't Blame Me, which is an advice podcast where listeners call in and we share our thoughts on situations such as what to do if you're going to your boyfriend's family function and you haven't told him that you previously slept with both his twin brothers.
Then on Thursdays, we release our podcast, But Am I Wrong?, where we ethically gossip about pop culture, politics, our lives, and your lives. Listeners write in and we tell them if they're wrong or right in a situation. Are you the hero or the villain?
On Tuesdays and Fridays, we throw in a little something extra as well.
A little something, something. We strive to create a community grounded in activism, mental health, and inclusivity. Think of us as like your blunt, honest friends who give you advice that you need to hear, not what you want to hear. But we're also always rooting for your success. What we lack in credentials, we make up for in
opinions.
We do that in every episode too.
We're professional, unprofessional. So if you're looking for a new slate of podcasts to add to your routine, we're here for you.
Acast recommends.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.